Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Wow, are we going to be talking about some things that you don't often hear on my show? Murder, mayhem, mystery, criminal prosecutors. Oh, boy. Yes, that's what we're going to be talking about today. I have a wonderful guest, Margaret McLean. Her book is titled Under Fire, and wow, is it a gripper. Wonderful for Sunday reading and or actually any time. But, boy, if you want something that's going to captivate your mind and have a lot of reality in it to boot, this is a book you're going to want to read. Margaret, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on, Donna. I really appreciate it.
This is a fascinating book to me. Now, you yourself practiced law as a criminal prosecutor. You are currently teaching law at Boston College's Carroll School of Management. And though you've written before, you said when before we went on air, this was really your first big book, as you called it.
Yes.
You have been, you know, you've lived in Rome and in New York. Why is it law was so appealing to you? What was it that made you say, I want to be an attorney?
Well, I loved the courtroom from the start. I always liked to act. I've written a play as well. So I've loved the stage, and to try a case, an intellectual argument before a jury is such a wonderful stage, and that's why what drew me to the law and to the courtroom. I also love the law. It's something that's constantly changing. I love constitutional law, criminal law, business law. I like to think, and I like to read the New York Times every day. I like to read the Wall Street Journal and my Lawyers Weekly, because it really informs me on what's going on in the world today. So being a lawyer just is what I've always wanted to do. And a writer, of course.
Now, your story is extremely complex, in my view.
Okay.
And it has some very interesting twists and turns. And, of course, it is a mystery. It is involving so many aspects of law, and that's what intrigued me, was the factual reality of your own experience that you fold into this, which I think gives it a life that makes the story breathe, and you're inhaling and exhaling as you're going through the variables that pop up every now and then. And I thought, gee whiz, how many times have I heard, just pick a few characters for a book, and that'll do it. Well, I'll tell you, folks, she's got a whole bunch of them, a whole bunch of them. But we're going to be talking first about the woman, Sarah, who I feel you patterned after yourself. Am I wrong?
That's correct. I did pattern Sarah a lot after myself. She's a former gang unit prosecutor, just like I am. And also a redhead. I'm a tall redhead. I didn't play hockey. I'm actually a tennis player, but I thought Sarah would be more interesting if she was a hockey player. At Boston, we're all into our hockey and the Bruins, of course, winning the Stanley Cup. But I would say that a lot of her personality traits are based on me and a little bit my youngest daughter, my oldest daughter, who the book is dedicated to. So it's a little bit, but then as a character develops throughout the course of the novel and for future novels, she takes on a life of her own. And so did Buddy Clancy, her uncle, who also defends the case.
Oh, yeah. I love this guy. I just thought, hey, buddy, I've known a couple of people like you, and he is slick as he can be.
Buddy Clancy writes himself. I have no, I truly mean this. I almost have no control over that character, especially if you see him live on stage in New York, where we're doing the play, a courtroom drama based on the Under Oath book, which is coming out in April. Buddy comes alive, and when I write him, his cross-examinations, I'm telling you, he writes himself. It's the easiest thing to write. So I don't know why. I tried many, many cases against Buddy Clancy types. So, but these characters do, they change with the times, and they all eventually have backstories, and I start to care about them, and sometimes I dream about them, believe it or not.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. I think a good writer, their characters are very alive to them, and that's what gives them persona. Now, you have a quote right at the beginning of your book where you say, the one thing that doesn't abide by majority rule is a person's conscience.
Oh, yes.
And
Harper Lee.
Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird. And that is something, you hear pros and cons, and I'm just going to throw this in quickly, about juries. And there are so many people that will have an attitude, juries don't get it. Juries, you know, you think about the case that was in the news for, about the young woman, Casey, and her baby and all this stuff, and we won't go into that. But there was an attitude with that jury saying there wasn't evidence. There was just a very strong attitude. You didn't give me what I believed would be absolute proof. So a decision was made, and that's something like what goes on in your book, because you have this woman, Amina, who is a Muslim.
Right.
And probably, if it had been in days of the Old West, they would have lynched her in the first 5 minutes without knowing any evidence at all.
That's correct.
Because of prejudicial opinions and attitudes and judgments. As an attorney, when you were in the courtroom, when you were selecting a jury, did you look for specific things so that you could sort of get an idea of how that juror thought so that you would say, I don't want that one in here because if I have that one, I definitely won't be able to reach him?
Oh, yes. We do that all the time. And here in Massachusetts, we don't have as much time for jury selection, which is voir dire, as other states. So it's voir dire in the state courts, which is most of the criminal prosecutions. It's very limited. So we get into the courtroom sometimes, and the court officer would hand us the jury pool, and we would quickly flip through these one-page bios of people. Now, as a prosecutor, I would not want an engineer on the jury. And what that would be, I felt that the engineers would overanalyze the case and the accountants, and they'd find reasonable doubt and let the guy off. Now, if you're on the other side, you want an engineer, you want an accountant, you want someone to overanalyze the case and say, well, I don't think the prosecution proved that case beyond a reasonable doubt. And they'll find the smallest thing to turn it the other way. So you have to be very careful about picking a jury. Also, there's quite a bit of skill as far as eye contact, looking at the person. For the prosecution side, sometimes I want a conservative-looking little old lady. I would never want a liberal professor type. Kick them right off because I'd be afraid they'd have sympathy for the defendant. So there's all sorts of strategies involved. I don't know what went on as far as picking the jury in the Casey Anthony case, but I do believe that there were two trials there, right? There was the actual courtroom trial where the jurors who were seated and screened listened to every single bit of evidence. But the other trial was the court of public opinion, and that's where the millions of us Americans looked at the TV, and we decided that she was guilty just by the way she looked or by all the evidence that came out before the trial even started. And I call that the court of public opinion. And the court of public opinion doesn't have to prove her guilty beyond a reasonable doubt like the jurors do. So I think that's why America is so angry at the outcome.
I agree. And it was like the O.J. Simpson case.
Oh, yes. Well, that one, we at least got to see it more, I think, right? Wasn't that one constantly on court TV back in the day? I noticed they don't have court TV like they used to, unfortunately, but I just know I didn't have time to really watch that Casey Anthony trial for myself. So I couldn't form an opinion either way.
I think it's important because your book has so many wonderful aspects of information regarding juries. This is a story about a fireman that is killed while he's shot, while he is rescuing Amina, and Malik, who is her son. I mean, he's been shot. He's got all of this equipment on him. The fire's raging around him. He manages to get them to safety, and then he dies because he was killed by a bullet. So the case is filled with all kinds of information, and immediately, because this woman owns this building, she's a Sinhalese Muslim, and she is automatically blamed. People are saying she's the one that set the fire. What
right.
was it that made you choose this kind of a characterization? Because immediately she's damned from the beginning. She wasn't even given a chance to defend herself.
Exactly. Well, I wanted to create, because there's so much controversy going on, especially following 9/11, with prejudice against Muslims in the country, I chose a Muslim. And she originally was from Jordan. So I wrote the book, and I handed it in to my agent, and my agent handed it back and said, "This is great, but I want to know more about this Muslim woman standing trial. So I want you to go out and really spend some time with a Muslim woman and then give me the manuscript after that." And so what she wanted was, I write in the third person, and each chapter is in someone's point of view. So she wanted a bunch of chapters in this Muslim woman's point of view. How does she feel standing trial? So I came back to the house, and I said, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I don't know any Muslims, and I really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I got lucky in that 2 days later, somebody said, "Oh, we have to introduce you to this woman who lives outside of Boston. She's from Senegal. She's black. She's an immigrant, and she's Muslim, and she's a wonderful woman." And so they set the meeting up, and I went over, and I met her for lunch. And she was so open. She wore the traditional Muslim clothing, and I was surprised that she was willing to meet with me at least once, twice a week throughout the course of the entire summer, and she told me everything I needed to know about what it felt like to be from Senegal originally. That's where you get all the... She's from a polygamous compound.
Mm-hmm.
Senegal has the highest rate of polygamy in the world, and I didn't even know that. So we sat there, and she told me all about her religion, her culture, her traditions, a little on Sharia law. She made me food in the Senegalese tradition. I was able to sit and eat it on the floor just like she does. And she also told me about what her relationship was with her husband. She was married, but her husband was over in Senegal. She was, you know, struggling as an immigrant to raise this 15-year-old son in Boston, and she had a little hair braiding store. So she was really struggling to make ends meet. And I wrote those sections, and I thought, wow, I really learned something about what it is to be Muslim and an immigrant, and it made the book a lot better. I think I can't imagine not writing that part, but that's how she evolved as a character. And people do seem to like her and sympathize with her.
She's wonderful. The graciousness, the clarity of personality, the integrity of her personality, and I love the bowl.
Yes.
That being brought in, that special bowl, and there's a very unique twist in the story regarding a homeless man that she was feeding on a regular basis who
yes.
Was a veteran and had become homeless.
Yeah.
Now,
I don't know how I thought of all that in hindsight, but the bowl, this woman had a bowl just like that, and it was the Senegalese dinner bowl. So what you do as an author is take those images, and you listen to everything. And so that bowl became a very important part of the story. And as Buddy Clancy would say, the old defense attorney would say to his niece, who's a younger lawyer trying to learn all the old tricks, you have to know somebody's story if you're planning on defending them. And that's what one of Sarah's challenges throughout the book was, getting to know this immigrant woman with her different traditions. And she was informed through it. She became a better lawyer at the end of the book by learning this woman's story. And I actually became a better writer by learning the woman's story as well. It's actually interesting.
Well,
I hadn't thought of that before.
That's right. Well, I think also the character Danny, who is the homeless man, he's a former Marine, he's a man of tremendous principle, and your portrayal for him, where did you come into the awareness of this man? Because who he is as a character is a lot deeper than what anybody would have even scratched the surface on. That's one of the things that I noticed in the book. It was the fact that you have these very various personalities, and you have to dig to find out what's going on with them, and that's what Sarah, as the lawyer, has to do, because she realizes the woman that is being represented, Amina, is innocent, but you've got to dig. And who did you base this one on, the character, Danny?
Danny is based on... Well, working up in the Lawrence courts, I did work with, on various cases, some homeless people very similar to Danny. I also, part of my writer's group, every Monday I meet and write, I have a writer's group. One of the writers is a Vietnam vet. So Danny has always been a character in the book. When I would take my chapter, we read our chapters out loud, I think part of Danny's character emerged from, yes, some homeless people who I ran across and knew and got to know, and this writer who was also a Vietnam vet in that era, the same as Danny. So I think the combination created Danny, and yeah, he was a great character to write, and he evolved over the course of the book too. I'm glad you liked Danny, actually.
Oh, Danny is very special to me because there was an impact with him. And I think the reason that I was so fascinated with the subject Danny is that the way he communicated, most people would say, you're loony.
Yeah.
But he wasn't loony.
No.
He was communicating in a way that allowed him to articulate certain things. And it wasn't until the character Sarah and Uncle Buddy really listened and understood. And Buddy,
right.
the portrayal of Buddy is that this is a guy that is so street smart, but he's people smart.
Exactly.
He's
exactly.
People
to be
smart.
A good lawyer, yep,
mm-hmm.
you have to be street smart. And that's what we get from Buddy Clancy. And back to Danny, working on the arson cases up in Lawrence, where I worked, it was really the arson capital at the time of the country. There was talk about that. There were so many arsons up there, and many times our witnesses were homeless people. And I'll never forget one of the best state police fire investigators I ever worked with. His name is Paul Zipper, Sergeant Paul Zipper. He'd be so great at taking these homeless vets and really getting their stories, and they don't. He actually told me about the. I think, as you recall, Danny calls his alley his home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a real Danny who lived in an alley. I don't know if his name was Danny, but he lived in an alley. Vietnam vet, and he did have a bird cage without a bird, and a broken TV set which wasn't plugged into anything. Which he watched. And so I kind of got that from working on those arson cases. I didn't make that up. So so that's, I guess, where they come from. It's real life, real people, real stories.
That's true. And then adapting it into a storyline. I enjoyed right at the beginning of the book when Sarah was asked by her uncle, she, you know, gee whiz, I want you to come and work with me. And Sarah says, no, I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do anything with you. And he said, why not? And she said, they're all guilty. 99%, according to my experience, in the gang unit, the police usually get it right in the first place, and thanks to lawyers like you, Uncle Buddy, the bad guys get off on the technicality. I mean, the character Sarah really has an attitude.
Yeah.
But the case begins to intrigue her because she can't, and Uncle Buddy just has this way of saying, well, you know, don't make up your mind. You know, if you ask the right questions at the wrong time, you're going to get the wrong answers. Now, people don't like hearing that.
Right, right. Especially Sarah.
Yeah. You know, oh, no, here we go. But it gives such a good demonstration of how, in law, because of all of the gray areas and all of variables that have to be considered, you really do have to have a clarity of thinking and be able to bounce around. But Uncle Buddy felt that Amina was innocent. He just felt it that way from the beginning. And then
right.
What you bring in, and this fits right in with today's world. I mean, the conspiracy theorists would just have a blast with this book. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Between the state police and the different, and the Boston police, and then the governor is doing stinky stuff, and then you've got some realtors that are doing things with foreclosures. I mean, you folded so much of what's going on in today's world into this. It just,
right.
It has so many layers to it.
Thank
it's like
you.
A tiramisu special. And you've got...
I love that. I've got to get that quote. I love that.
You've got all of these levels with all this whipped cream in between.
Sounds good.
And no calories. But it really is. It's absolutely amazing. Now, the forensics part, you go into a lot of detail. So for any of my listeners that love murder mysteries and are Perry Mason fans or CSI fans or just fans of, you know, anything through the years that's relating to mystery, this is the kind of book that is really going to grip you. Now, in your book, and I'm going to quote exactly from it, because you bring out so much legal insight, and I thought, wow, if the average person could read this, they'd get an insight into what goes on behind the scenes in a courtroom. And your Uncle Buddy here in the book, he says, most important piece of advice I'll give you, know your jury, learn to read their body language. By the time we present our case, we should know what color toilet paper each prefers. And I thought, oh, boy, here we go. But it's what we were talking about in the beginning, you know, when I was asking you about juries. But sometimes what you see is not the truth. And you have a sinister character in here by the name
oh, yes.
of Cole. Oh, my Lord. I mean, this holy Joseph. And there are real people like this anyway. I know that for a fact. And so he comes in and he's dropped in. You dropped him in every once in a while. And anybody that eats olives the way he does, as you described it, I went, oh, yuck. This guy's a creep.
Oh, yeah. And, the olive... Yeah. I love olives, by the way, and so that's where I came up with the olives.
Well, and they're specific olives, but here we have really a mixture of conspiracy, public attitude, ignorance, prejudice, hatred that is based on wrong information. And you have a love story that's in here. You have deception. You have a lot of good things.
Thank you.
When you were writing this story, when you were putting it together, did you find that there were certain parts that came alive in their own way that you had no idea you were going to add?
Oh, yes. Oh, that happens all the time. That can sometimes happen on a chapter-by-chapter basis. I start with an outline. Usually I have a trial in mind, something, current events, Originally, this started out as an eminent domain book, and I still have eminent domain in there, but then it evolved into the foreclosures and the governor and the casino and the political corruption. I like to keep an open mind as I write, and I also like to read the newspapers and keep up on current events, because something will hit me, and I'll say, oh, you know, that would be great for my book. I could see this character doing that. And like I said, things evolve with the characters over time. I mean, all of those characters you mentioned, they changed. And it's important as a writer to have a character go through a character arc, which is a change where they learn something from the beginning of the story to the end. And sometimes I don't know what that journey is going to be as a writer for a character. Sometimes I have an idea, and guess what? The character will take a right when I'm thinking they're going to take a left. So being a writer is actually fun because, like I said, there's some surprises for me. And also it's fun to meet different people. Like, I would never have gotten to know this Senegalese immigrant from Boston if I hadn't written this book, or reconnected with the arson specialists and the gun specialists and the homicide people. It's great fun. Plus, got to ride around in fire trucks and do all sorts of fun stuff at the Fire Academy. So, this book changes. They change all the time, which is wonderful.
And the character Uncle Buddy is really a strategist.
Oh, yeah.
And he knows, he says, listen to people's stories. He really is someone that is an observer, and I love his ties. I just think that, you know, that's absolutely incredible, his bow ties. And
Thank you.
The variables with the bow ties really is a hoot. Because
oh, thanks. Sometimes it's tough to figure out what he's going to wear next, I will tell you. It usually comes. I'll have to think, oh, what is he going to wear this time? Because each time it has to be more creative. And the rat tie I thought was funny. He thought of that on his own. I swear I didn't even, I don't know how that popped into my head, but that was a good one.
Yes, it was. And then you also have a couple of jurors that you give attention to. Not many, but there's one or two, especially one. And this guy, I thought, my Lord, if that is the thinking, which is probably the thinking that goes on in the head of many people, you want to say, they're already prejudging situations without even going through the trial. They have already made up their mind. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yes, the guy named after the clam with the nickname Quahog. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he added a lot of color. His character would write itself too, really, because I could picture him thinking that way when he sees Amina wearing the headscarf. Of course, right away, we know she's African, she's from Senegal, but he calls her the Arab. And of course, mm-hmm. she's not an Arab, she's African. But mm-hmm. in his mind, she's Muslim, she's Arab.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I think that there are so many subtleties that you bring out in the book relative to the way people think. And I don't know of a person on this planet, I don't care where they come from, where they don't have a patterning of prejudging. I've done it. I mean,
yeah,
it's
me
not
too.
It's just something. It's bingo, click, 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 click. The mind just goes ding, 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 ding. And it's only when you stop that ding, 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 ding stuff and you say, okay, this is what's in front of me. This may or may not be the truth. How do I find out the truth? And that is what Uncle Buddy does. Uncle Buddy
right.
has got the street smarts and has the thinking and experience, and he's slick as WD-40. I'm telling you, this guy is good. He is really good. So you've brought him to life, and Sarah, I know that you're going to be writing a series because you have decided that this is a niche you want to be in, and there are going to be the Boston murder mysteries that are going to be coming forth. But I'll tell you, I think you have done such a good job with this, and I can recommend it highly to my listeners. It is something that's loaded with so much fact, and I love stories when they're like this. You really feel like you're in that courtroom, and you are surprised at what happens. And, of course, I'm not telling anybody the ending because it's
going
to be a real doozy. It is going to be justice will be served, but not in a way that necessarily is going to be through the courtroom. And it's a very interesting patterning that evolves. And one of the things that's brought out is that the sharks in the world do go in for the jugular if they can get to you. And that's in real life. And so this is brought out in your book, Under Fire. Now, I know we're running out of time. Margaret, your website is margaretmclean.com, and McLean is spelled M-C-L-E-A-N. What are people going to find on your website if they check you out?
Well, they'll find, actually, it's kind of interesting. They'll find a bio on me and some information on the book and reviews. There's also some media clips of television, and I'd love to put this on the website. I think this would be wonderful. And, and then another interesting thing, I've got to update it a little bit, but the photographs that you see in the photograph section, you'll see people fighting a fire. Well, that's me in the red hat. And I have to make that clear that for the training for this book, I was able to go in and actually fight a live fire as part of the training at the Fire Academy. So
you'll
see me all, they did it exactly to the facts of the book. They hung gas-filled balloons and had the potato chip display underneath, and I was second on the line, and they got that fire going. So I actually was in a roaring fire, and you'll see on the website that's me again with the red hat and so I really knew to write that opening scene. I knew exactly what it felt like to be in the heat of the fire. So
Margaret,
it's fun.
Yes,
that's what they'll find. And also, you can buy the book at Amazon or at local bookstores.
Well, Margaret, we are out of time. Margaret McLean, check out her website. The book is terrific. I recommend it highly. And, Margaret, I'll be eagerly anticipating your next one, so you be sure to get it to me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. This was a wonderful interview, Donna. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone line, if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here it is, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I just so enjoy interviewing so many wonderful people and seeing all of the talent that they display. And I don't often do the fiction. I have so much fabulous nonfiction material, but this was an absolutely incredible book. Under Fire is its title, and I didn't mention it before we went off the interview, and I wanted to be sure that I mentioned that to you so that if you wanted to check it out, I'm telling you, it's a gripper. You will really, really like it. Now have that pad of paper handy and a pen, because my recipe for barbecue chicken and sweet potatoes, I think you will enjoy. It's a wonderful summer meal, and I wasn't able to get to it yesterday, so I will get to it today. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Dr. Murray Grossen, and Dr. Grossen is a phenomenal physician, as far as I'm concerned, because of his attitudes. His book is called Stressed, and we're going to be talking about this and what he has learned as a physician to empower his patients so that they can work through the levels of stress that so many of them experience and actually become healthier because of doing some of the things he recommends. So he's going to be my guest tomorrow. And next week, we've got a fun lineup. We're going to be Saving the West on Monday. Ah, yes, another good summer read. Peter Decker is going to be my guest. Beauty Without Injections. Yes, ladies, you can look good, and guys, you too, but you ladies especially are interested. Helen Day is going to be my guest. And Effortless, yes. Julie Steelman is my guest, and she is a woman that says you can sell things and you don't have to go according to old protocols. And then on Thursday of next week, we're going to be talking with Jim Beach, School for Startups. If you're a person that's wanting to go into business, this book is outstanding. He has a wonderful, wonderful book, and we are going to be talking with him. And then we've got another thriller, The 16th Man, Tom Sawyer. Now, Tom Sawyer wrote for Murder, She Wrote. He did 24 of the series. He's an incredible writer, and this is a repeat appearance with Tom Sawyer. But this is a book that really will keep you on the edge of your seat. So we've got a great lineup, good summer reads, all kinds of good things. Share the information with your friends, and don't forget, you can always go into the archives at bbsradio.com if you miss one of the shows. But if you want to, check show information, and you can see what's there. Now, we're only a couple of days away from the Renaissance Fair in Bonnie Lake, Washington. For those of you in Western Washington, I'm going to be appearing there both this coming weekend and the following weekend. This is a fabulous, fabulous family event. We were just jam-packed last weekend, and it's going to be jammed even more because the weather is going to be spectacular this weekend. So if you want to find out information regarding the Renaissance Fair, go to Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, and you will get all of the information. There's lots of free parking. You'll get all the ticket information. You'll find out about the vendors, and you'll be able to find me. You'll see me in the canopy that has the giant yellow banners with big, big red lions on it. Come on in and say hello. I would be delighted to meet you. I'm doing many consultations there, and I'll also be bringing in a lot of books from my shows, and I've got some special little handmade embroidered angels that I'll have there as well. But this is the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. I'm telling you, it's the best ever. And it is so much fun for the kids. I've had people come up to me and say, oh, Donna, this is just great. It has been an awesome experience for the whole family. We have just had a blast. So do look it up on the web. Check it out. Find out the information. Come in costume if you want. Do what you want to do. Just know that you can have a lot of fun. And it is going to be something everyone will enjoy. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008 is the toll-free number. If you're listening for the first time, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. After that, let me tell you what I perceive for you, and then you're welcome to ask a question about anything that is important. I wanted to share a quote with you before I share the recipe. And this is something that I think is important. You know, we have a lot going on today. Our country has gone through so much upheaval, and I really don't think it's all bad. I think sometimes we have to have upheaval before we straighten things out. So many times we don't do that because we're comfortable. And it's only when we get uncomfortable that we're motivated. And that is what I think is happening today. And I wanted to share this. Horace Mann said
The experience of the ages that are past, the hope of the ages that are yet to come, unite their voices in an appeal to us. They implore us to think more of the character of our people than of its vast numbers, to look upon our vast natural resources not as tempters to ostentation and pride, but as means to be converted by the refining alchemy of education into mental and spiritual treasures, and thus give to the world the example of a nation whose wisdom increases with its prosperity and whose virtues are equal to its power. A nation whose wisdom increases with its prosperity and whose virtues are equal to its power. Horace Mann, I think, was very wise, and he perceived something that needs to be remembered today. We do stand on the shoulders that have gone before us, but are we standing up straight? I think we need to. And I think we need to remember that every single person can make a difference. And we just don't assume that it's okay for someone else to get away with corruption and crime and other things when the average individual is not going to be able to do that. They're held accountable. So my feeling is, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, applied in a different application, but nonetheless, very significant. This is Donna Sebo, and I've got a barbecue chicken and sweet potatoes recipe that I thought you would enjoy. That's one of my favorite meats, is chicken, and I love barbecue. But sometimes you want to have something that's a little bit different. Well, this recipe is going to be exactly that. We're going to take a break for just a minute, and when we come back, I'll have the recipe ready for you and some other good points of information as well. So don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, get that pad of paper and pen handy. Here's your barbecue chicken and sweet potatoes recipe. Now, you're going to need a teaspoon of ground cumin, a teaspoon of dried oregano, 3/4 teaspoon of salt, and of chili powder, 3/4 teaspoon of salt and chili powder. You're going to need 1.5 pounds of sweet potatoes. You want them peeled, and you want to cut them in 1/2-inch slices. And then you're going to need one red onion. You want to cut that into 8 wedges. You're going to need a tablespoon of oil and 1/4 cup of apple jelly, 2 tablespoons of fresh lime juice, 1 chicken, and then maybe about 3.5 to 4 pounds of chicken. You want to cut it into the 8 pieces, and 1 tablespoon of your chopped fresh cilantro. Now, with your chicken, when you're cutting it, something I learned from a cooking show I watched, The Barefoot Contessa, is one of my favorites. And what she does when she cuts the chicken up, she cuts out the back so that that is not part of your chicken. So you put your chicken breast down, cut that back section out, just right down, strip it out, put it in your freezer and save it for making chicken stock. It's a really good thing to do. And then, you know, cut the rest of the chicken up. Now, this recipe I'm going to give you, you can put on the grill, but I'm also going to tell you how you can do it if you don't want to grill it, if you want to put it in the oven. So you'll get it both ways. Now, you want to get your grill good and hot. If you're going to use the oven, you want your oven to 350 degrees. So it's preheating both, either one of them, whichever you're going to use. You're going to mix your cumin, your oregano, your salt, and your chili powder. And you want to take your potatoes, your onion, your oil, and you want to put them, I think, either in a bowl or you can put it in a plastic bag if you like. And you add 1 teaspoon of your spice mixture. Shake it up, and you can put it right into a foil packet. That's what you really should do if you're going to put it on the grill. Put the potatoes, the onion, the oil, and 1 teaspoon of the spice mixture. Mix it all together. Wrap it in a heavy oil packet. The next thing you're going to do is take your jelly, your apple jelly, your lime juice, and 1 teaspoon of your spice mixture, and you want to sprinkle the chicken with the remaining spice mixture that you have. Place the chicken skin side down over direct heat, and you want to grill it until it's brown, and that'll take 5 minutes, and then you want to turn it over, and you want to place it over indirect heat. Now, this is when you're grilling it, and you grill it until the chicken is no longer going to be pink, so it'll take about 45 minutes, and in the last 5 minutes of cooking, then you brush it with your apple jelly mixture that you've got. Now, if you have your foil packet of the potatoes on the grill, you put it over indirect heat 30 minutes before the chicken is done, and you just let it cook right in that foil package. It'll take about 30 minutes. And then you can use some cilantro if you want with a little when you're ready to serve it. Now, if you're going to put this in the oven, you take your seasoned chicken and your potatoes, and the potatoes are not in the foil. Put them in your roasting pan, cook them together for 45 minutes, and then you brush your chicken with the jelly mix during the last 5 minutes. And it's going to give this wonderful, wonderful flavor, and it's going to have spice. Now, if you're like me and you want it a little spicier, then use a little bit more spice. Just double your spice recipe if that's what you want. Also, if you'd like to have more of the flavor in your meat, you could put the spice mixture maybe on your chicken the night before, and put it in the refrigerator. So just try different things. But this is really a very, very good recipe. And it's something, like I said, goes on the grill or in the oven. And it's a whole different flavor. It's got the sweet and the spicy, and it just really is terrific. So I think you will enjoy it a great deal. All right, and give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. So many times we don't know what another person goes through. And I cannot speak for anyone else, but I know that there have been times in my life where I have made judgments about people without really knowing anything about them. And this is something that I feel we should be able to grow out of. It's not bad to make assessments of people. I'm not saying you shouldn't be discerning. But I do think that sometimes we have to be willing to ask questions and maybe just sit back and listen so we hear someone's story. Because there's a lot going on in people's lives that normally they will not talk about at all. And I can tell you from my many years of being a counselor and also doing this radio show, can't judge a book by its cover. You have to get in and find out what the story is. Well, there's a story about a woman, Betty Chin. she was born in China, and she was homeless in China. People think about what's going on in China today, and they have no clue many times about the desperation of many of the Chinese people that goes on today. And it was even worse under the Cultural Revolution. China's history is replete with some pretty atrocious stuff. Well, she had been hopeless. She didn't believe, after 4 years of being homeless, she was 11 years old. She didn't think things could get any better. She had reached that point that just about anybody can reach, where she didn't think that hope even existed anymore. However, at 11 years of age, she decided if she was still alive, if she was able to become a grown-up, she'll do anything she can to make sure people are not hungry. What happened with Betty is she was born in Kaiping, Guangdong, and she was 7 years old when the Cultural Revolution came into place in 1966. It was led by Chairman Mao, and the violence and the turmoil that occurred in China, nobody will ever know the full depth of it. Her parents were imprisoned in labor camps, and they just left her, took her parents off. And I know of other families this happened to. She was absolutely terrified. She had to fend for herself. Well, she begged for food when she was brave enough to ask for it. But many times, because so many people were starving, all she got was a kick or a fist in the face. So she'd stop asking. Well, can you imagine as a little girl going through something like this? It's pretty harsh. So she'd scour the trash. That's the safer way. She stopped talking. Well, somehow or another, at 14 years of age, she was able to get to America. Well, she learned how to talk again, learned how to speak English. She learned how to speak English from watching Sesame Street. And eventually, she did grow up. She ended up marrying a wonderful man, and she found that she was able to live in Eureka, California, and she had a couple of children. One day, one of her sons came home, and he was talking about a little girl in his class who often didn't have any lunch, and that made him very, very anxious, and he was so concerned, he didn't know what to do about that. Well, that brought back some real memories. And so she said to her son, I'm going to give you an extra sandwich. You go ahead and you give it to this little girl. Well, she found out about the little girl's story, tough times for the family, and she began to bring the family hot meals. She said, I never forgot the vow I made to myself when I was 11 years old. She was so grateful to be in America because America had given her the opportunity for a life, or she had none in China. So she was working part-time, and she decided what she was going to do with her money. One day, she cashed her check. She bought some extra food. And she had a truck, and she made an urn of fresh coffee and donuts. And she drove down to the welfare office, which was in Humboldt County, near to her. And there were a lot of homeless people around the welfare office, and she saw them going over by a railroad bridge, and she got a lot of memory recall when she was watching it. So she put her truck in that area and started handing out coffee and donuts. These people were very, very grateful, and she said she had to really be aware of the pain that she had pushed away for so long that she had suffered through when she was growing up. She said by doing this, she began to heal. Well, it ended up Betty would wake up at 2:45 every day to brew coffee and make sandwiches. Her husband had helped her pack the truck, and she got so she was passing out breakfast to the homeless. And then after work, she was making dinner for as many as 500 people. She saw a disabled veteran, Vietnam vet. She saw a runaway. She would help people whenever she could. Well, people in the community heard about her, and they gave what they could. People started donating peanut butter, whatever they wanted, clothing. And there was so much that she was able to do and that she's still doing. Do you know this woman has been doing this for 20 years? She was awarded the 2010 Presidential Citizens Medal for her extraordinary giving. And she has wanted to have her own place called Betty's Place. And one day she'll have it, where anybody who's hungry can pull up a chair and have a meal. So for over 20 years, she has been twice a day, 7 days a week, bringing food to people. And this is what she said. When I hear rainfall, I know someone is out there getting soaked. When my heater comes on in winter, I know it's too cold to be without a warm meal. I'll never forget what it's like to have nothing and to wish with all my heart somebody cared. So I want these folks to know I care. And because of that, then miracles can happen. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. One person can make a difference. And you are that person. So glad we could share this time together today. Take care. We'll be here same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.